DW Africa Link.
I am talking to you today in this podcast about education, because education is a right and no child should be deprived of it. Every child dreams of becoming important in society and having a good and enjoyable life. But as we will hear later in this podcast, that's not the case. Worldwide, governments have invested in formal education, but millions of children in some African countries are not attending school. Why? Stay tuned. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Let me start by bringing you up to speed on why millions of children's education has been affected in some parts of Africa. Around 2.8 million children in West and Central Africa are unable to go to school due to conflict, according to the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF. UNICEF also says Southern Nigeria has around 3 million children who are not in school. What are the key obstacles and how can this be resolved? Dr. Ibrahim Baba Shatambaya, youth activist, public commentator and lecturer at Usmanu Danfodio University, Sokoto, Nigeria, and DW correspondent Shehu Salmanu. Thank you so much for joining us, gentlemen, on this particular podcast. Now, Dr. Baba Shatambaya, the key obstacles preventing children in conflict-affected areas of West and Central Africa from accessing education. Please, just tell us in brief.
Yes, usually societies that are enabled by conflicts are societies that are considered to be very, very inimical to every aspect of progress and development. And one key area in which conflicts actually impact negatively on our society is about allowing children particularly to have access to their educational institutions. In the case of Nigeria, particularly that of Northwest Nigeria, you may have been aware that one of the key target institutions of kidnappings and other forms of criminality that have made this part of the country very, very unstable is that pupils in specific educational institutions are being targeted, ranging from primary schools, secondary schools, and even tertiary institutions have at one point or the other been the target of kidnappings and criminal activities that are related to ransom paying. On account of this, the government itself has on different occasions actually shut down certain specific schools and made attempts to actually move pupils to urban centers where incidences of kidnapping are very, very few. And you could, in areas where conflict actually ravaged the communities and they have moved their predominant locations to locations that are not theirs as internally displaced persons, you discover that the key challenge they are facing is not necessarily education, but about the basic needs of survival. That is food, water, and other medical services. That is predominantly their concern at that point where they are people who have been displaced from their communities. Safety is the natural inclination of every human, including children. But basically, the issue about access to education or wanting to go to school for children is basically the decision of the parents. And most of these parents have been dislodged. They have actually lost their means of livelihood. So what they do predominantly is to focus on how to get food, how to feed their children and themselves, and how to cater for other immediate needs, like where to sleep and medical access to medical services. So you discover that the children themselves know little about the value of education. They rather depend on their parents who make decisions on their behalf. And given the fact that many of these parents are impoverished on account of the fact that poverty have eaten deep into the fabric of most communities in Nigeria, you discover that when conflict actually displaces people to such an extent that the means of livelihood that they use to actually cater for themselves and their children is lost. Immediate thinking is not about education, it's about survival. And this explains why number of out-of-children have actually skyrocketed on account of the instability and conflict that have pervaded the length and breadth of many parts of this country, predominantly the north.
Absolutely. Now, Shehu Salmanu, you are our correspondent, and you've been reporting a lot on these issues. Can you tell us more about what is happening on ground? What are the parents saying?
Parents, they decide on what their child going to do, either to go to school or not go to school. Parents are striving to survive. So the issue of going to school, it's not even there because their parents or the parents are struggling.
Now, to you, Dr. Shatambaya, let's talk about government's response to this situation. How has the Nigerian government addressed these challenges? Because, I mean, obviously, we all know how important education is as much as also safety is.
Yes. When we talk about government in Nigeria, as you are aware, we have three levels of government, the state, the local government, the state, and the federal government. And each of these levels of government actually has a stake in the issues of managing crises associated with conflicts and other forms of social ills that are associated with movement of people, forced movement of people, forced migration within the country on account of insecurities in various communities across northern Nigeria. And I will tell you that government response has not been adequate. If not for anything, the very fact that Nigerian system is one that has suffered high levels of corruption, many officials of the government have leveraged this situation of internally displaced people and lack of access to education by people who are affected by various forms of criminality to actually come out with policies and make claims of financial commitment that do not necessarily dovetail or reach out to these people that are affected by lack of access to education. The children that are affected by lack of access to education will actually be enrolled, either new schools created around areas where internally displaced people are residing, or efforts made by the government to actually enroll them in existing institutions within the neighborhoods of their new place of residence or in the area in which they are temporarily residing. But then the government will always talk about this. They will always come out with statements to actually tell the world that they are doing something to actually address this crisis of lack of access to education. But in the end, practically, the government had not made any substantive arrangement to actually accommodate these children by way of saying to it that, first and foremost, the basic needs of the parents and these children are actually addressed such that both the parents and the pupils will actually have interest in going to school. Because there is no way arrangements to go to school will actually pay off when the children are hungry. There is no way parents will allow their children to go to school where the parents themselves are hungry. Remember, Northern Nigeria is one area of this country whereby there's an existing almajiri system that has been perverted such that children who are actually enrolled into Islamia schools have now turned into beggars on the streets. These children are littered across the length and breadth of Nigerian cities in the name of the so-called almajiri, which is now a perverted system that allows for children to actually go to the street to beg and actually take the proceeds of that begging to their teachers in Islamia schools. Now, with this existing system, the parents who have been displaced, who have now moved to new neighborhoods, will now capitalize on this opportunity. They see a window of opportunity for them to actually take care of their basic needs. It's about using the children to actually make money, to actually cater for their basic needs. The children that are very small, who do not even know their right from their left, but the way they organize themselves to even beg on the street, sometimes you begin to wonder as if somebody is actually coaching them on the words to use, the gestures to use, and some of them will just come. You will see them playing. The moment they see you, they run to you and they'll start crying immediately as if they are hurt. Something is actually hurting them. In order to actually provoke your emotions so that you sympathize with them, I actually give them money or any other thing that will be of benefit to them. So this is the situation in northern Nigeria. And unless and until the government is actually serious about tackling this issue, we are nowhere close to making headway as far as this issue of lack of education, lack of access to functional education by children in Northern Nigeria is concerned.
Mm. But before I come to you, Shehu, to just find out if you've done a report on these children on the streets that Dr. Shatambaya is talking about. Dr. Shatambaya, I understand you say that Nigerian government has not done anything, but some of these reports are actually from United Nations. We're talking of also like international organizations. Have they done anything to address these challenges in Northern Nigeria? What role are these international organizations, including especially UN, are doing to play in collaborating with local governments to provide education in these conflict zones?
Yes, predominantly what international organizations have actually done is actually to intervene in the areas of capacity building, in advisory capacity, and sometimes in terms of providing the needed utilities that the parents and the children actually need, in order to put them in the right frame of mind to actually appreciate the need for these children to actually go to school. The situation is that no matter the level of the commitment of these international organizations, no matter the quantum of intervention, if the governments at all levels in Nigeria are not serious, because principally the responsibility is that of the government in Nigeria, the government of Nigeria rather, whatever international organizations are going to do will be just in form of support. The predominant responsibility is that of the government to actually ensure that these interventions that international organizations are bringing to Nigeria in the area of access to education by organizations like UNESCO and UNICEF are actually put in practice with a view to ensuring that it impacts positively on the needs of the children in Nigeria to actually go to school. Whatever the quantum of intervention, like I said, we've had instances whereby certain materials will be brought by international organizations, international governmental, and even non-governmental organizations. But at the end of the day, in the course of distribution of these materials, you discover that there are high level of corruption associated with this distribution. Because these international organizations do not work in isolation. They work with Nigerians. And many of these Nigerians are officials of government that work in one agency or the other that are related with issues of humanitarian intervention, issues of social nature that are actually employed to and in institutions that are created to actually intervene and provide the needed support, to provide the needed support to the parents and children that are affected by some of these crises and some of these issues. But then you discover that when some of these materials are provided, we've had across time and space in Nigeria that some of these materials are actually diverted. And sometimes the materials are not even the target population. You discover that populations that are not affected negatively by the crisis of conflict are those that end up being beneficiaries of some of these materials. Like I said, generally international organizations are doing a lot, but then the government is not reciprocating. The government is not putting in institutionalized measures to actually ensure that the support and the technical capacity that these international organizations are trying to actually build actually reflects in terms of improving the fortunes of the children to actually get access to functional education.
Mm. Now, Shehu, you know, Dr. Shambaya mentioned something about children that are actually being trained or rather being coached to be actors and actresses on the streets in Northern Nigeria. I'm sure you drive around those places, you move around those places. Have you managed or tried to speak to these children just to find out exactly what is going on, who is doing this to them, who is making them do such actions whenever people are passing through to ask for money and also to actually play with people's emotions?
You know, the begging now in this part of the country has become a scam among the children and also their parents. You know, especially those that were sent from nearby villages to come to for the Quranic education, which is seen as spiritual in Northern Nigeria. There's also two categories of children. There's those with their living with their parents in the cities, and the children that were sent from the villages, as I said, to come for the Quranic studies. So you cannot differentiate between the two. They are all begging on the streets.
States in Northern Nigeria doing about this particular situation, Shehu?
When something is attached to religion, in Africa, you know, it is very hard to tackle. You know, the politicians here were afraid to maybe to do something against the children begging because they are looking for their political career.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Shehu. Now, Dr. Shatambai, back to you. We've spoken about what government is doing or what government is not doing, what international organizations are not doing, and we are all aware of the potential consequences if this issue remains unresolved. But what support or assistance do you think would help students to resume at least their education, even in these difficult circumstances?
Yes, what I think the government should do first and foremost is to address their immediate needs. There should be an attempt to actually create a system that will actually target these displaced people, look for a place. The government should come out with clear strategies and plans to create spaces. What I mean is developed structures whereby these people could stay temporarily. While they are staying there, the government should actually provide their immediate need in terms of food, in terms of shelter, in terms of clothing, in terms of sanitation and health services. Once this stage is actually accomplished, the next stage will be about cajoling the parents, influencing them to actually appreciate the need for education, and schools be created in nearby communities where those schools are not created, where those schools are not in existence, so that these children, these pupils will actually be withdrawn from the streets and actually sent to school so that they can actually have the required education they need in order to break this chain of creating a cycle of criminals. Because make no mistake about it, some of these children, if they endure in this trajectory of not having access to education, in this trajectory of deceiving people in the processes of their begging, by the time they grow up and they become mature, they become very easy targets of existing criminal groups. And therefore, the cycle of criminality in this country is going to be widened and is going to continue. So there's need for the government, like I said, to actually make sure that the needs of these people who are actually displaced is actually catered for. And schools are created and the parents are given the required encouragement to appreciate the need for these children to actually go to school. And while in school, the children should be provided with all the learning and other support facilities that really need to stay in school. Because it's not about enrolling. We have situations, many reasons account for the huge number of children who are not in school today. Many of them are school dropouts on account of the fact that they have been enrolled, but because of the fact that the system does not actually encourage children when they are enrolled to actually stay in school till the completion of their studies, you discover that many of them end up being dropouts. So the government should actually come out with a comprehensive system, a comprehensive mapping of this target population, and to make sure that hotspots areas where these terrorist organizations and criminal groups actually exist, the government should do everything possible to ensure that the activities of these criminals have actually been curtailed. Because even if you address this issue of those who are displaced now, if you don't take care of the root cause of the problem, the tendency is that you have more internally displaced people, and it will get to a stage whereby the government will not be able to handle the number of children that are out of school. And therefore, while taking care of these who are already displaced, the government should actually ensure that they prevent the activities of criminals and terrorist organizations so that we will not have more people being displaced and adding to the burden of these ones that are already displaced. So this is my fervent belief. If the government is able to do that, I think it will go a long way in actually improving the numbers in terms of access of children to functional and conventional education.
It is clear you want the government to focus mainly on the root cause. Dr. Ibrahim Baba Shatambaya, youth activist, public commentator, and lecturer at Usmanu Danfodio University, Sokoto, Nigeria, and DW correspondent Shehu Salmanu. Thank you so much for joining us on this particular topic.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Now, at the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. The Anglophone crisis, known as the Ambazonia War, on the Cameroon civil war is ongoing in Cameroon. That also means many schools have closed. Let's hear what students and parents in the English-speaking parts of Cameroon have to say through our correspondent, Killian Ngala.
When the crisis started, my parents, they were no more getting the regular salaries. So it first of all affected my parents and they could not send us to school immediately. So they had to go and start doing odd jobs to send me to school. I was schooling in the Southwest region. And when it became very serious, that was in 2019, I had to go and stay in the littoral region with some extended family members. I'm even talking personally because I had the opportunity, I had the privilege to stay with those relatives in the regions that are not affected by the crisis. There are so many students, so many of my classmates who did not have this opportunity. So they were left to stay in the house and becoming pregnant. You see 11-year-old, 12-year-old sitting in the house, and before you know, the end of the day, they are pregnant, their futures are shattered. Children want to become doctors, but they cannot become doctors. They're in the house doing house helps in people's houses just to get money. Some are pregnant, some are just frustrated. Parents are frustrated, children are frustrated. Parents are not able to get money to send children to school. Children are just, you know, sitting in the house and just living frustrated life.
It is quite alarming that we have up to 2.8 million children who are out of school at the moment. And unfortunately, Cameroon has not been left out of the statistics in West Africa. And notably, with the crisis going on in the English-speaking regions of the country, that's the Northwest and the Southwest regions, where we have thousands and thousands of children who are out of school at the moment. And it's quite unfortunate that you see these children or these persons see their dreams being shattered. We have the case of this young lady, 26, who is now a house help in Yaoundé. After she watched her dreams being shattered, she was living in the Southwest region, and then she had to cross over to Nigeria to escape from the violence that was taking place in her town. And after 4 years in Nigeria, life was not smiling at her, so she had to come back to Cameroon. And now she's in Yaoundé working as a domestic staff to help her raise funds so that she can pay her fees and continue with her dream of education. And we don't even know how long she's going to be able to work so that she can raise the funds to have this, to pay her fees. So it's quite a terrible situation.
As a parent, I'm deeply concerned about these statistics coming out from the United Nations in the Northwest and the Southwest region of Cameroon. For the past 8 years, separatist fighters don't want children to go to school and using it for political ends. This intentional method makes us to call the United Nations to or activate its mechanisms, especially in prosecuting those responsible.
It looks like it is already becoming a normalcy for the children not to go to school. And this is going to have a long-term effect on them. I feel very bad. In the long run, it's going to affect our families. It's going to affect our cultural identities. The fact that we didn't go to school at this time, we would not be able to occupy certain positions, because those positions, of course, will be occupied by the predominantly Francophone population. It's very unfortunate.
Kids were guiding us throughout the period that we're preparing for the GCE. Sometimes you'll be writing and you hear guns outside. You have to just pretend as if there was nothing. I remember one time we were about to write and the next day they burn our school.
As a parent, it has been a very difficult time for some of us in the Northwest and Southwest region of Cameroon, especially those in the Northwest region where I come from. It's been very difficult because almost three of my children are out of school. We don't know where to go. One of them told me that he wanted to be an engineer, a mechanical engineer. Another one told me that he wanted to be a doctor. Another one told me that he wanted to be a teacher. But it seems like everything is lost because they've been out from school for almost 7 years.
There is bleakness and despondency as you see children who are just drifting. They don't know what life holds for them again in future. There is school infrastructure that has been completely devastated in many places. There is the personnel, the stakeholders of education, many who are being threatened, many of who have been kidnapped, many of who have been mutilated, and many of whose corpses were buried with some other parts not seen.
That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a part of our community. Your feedback and participation makes this podcast what it is. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Click follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link episodes. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening, and it's bye for now.
DW, made for mind.